So, Brooke, I begged the Academy to let me tell you the news. Mm-hmm. Our video was nominated for most bitchin' video of all time.
The video that literally no one has seen?
Yep. This is just my way of bragging about our perfect promo video.
Right.
Yeah. They need to know. We shot it and it's amazing.
I mean, the Patreon subscribers have seen it.
Right. So it's out there.
Yeah.
But yeah, also, since we do our own marketing skills, everyone check out our promo video for our Patreon and bring tissues because you will feel things.
Don't tell them. You can't tell them to check out something that's not out there. We don't know when it's going to be posted.
Well, when it's out there, check out it.
Okay. Yeah, check out it.
Keep your eyes on this space. That's what they always say. All right, let's get into it. Famies. Try out.
Yeah, I mean, everyone in Patreon has already said Famies. You'd know that if you checked Patreon once in a while.
First of all, I check it once a month. And that has to count for something.
Have we even been on there a month yet at this point?
Oh, no. I don't know. All right. So we got to get into it. The celebs have been celebbing this week. Mm-hmm. We've got Kris Jenner's 70th birthday party, Nikki Glaser's problematic monologue, and Blake Lively's latest move in the It Ends With Us But Will Never End For Us saga. Mm-hmm. Plus, we're digging into the accusations against Jeremy Renner and breaking down the drama or non-drama between Millie Bobby Brown and David Harbour.
Yeah.
A case for the FBI. More like a case for Almost Famous. Mm-hmm. And then finally, one last thing.
Oh.
We're back, baby.
Oh, we are so back, baby.
All right, let's jump in. I'm Arisha Skidmore-Williams.
And I'm Brooke Ziffrin.
Grab a joint and a glass of milk.
Because this is Almost Famous.
Well, everyone, as we all know, Momager TM, Kris Jenner, is the big 7-0. Mm-hmm. And it's crazy because she doesn't look a day over 50.
Yeah. And her plastic surgeon doesn't look a penny under 4 million?
Minimum.
Yeah.
That was for like the first two facelifts.
This I think is a different guy.
This guy is set for life and his grandchildren as well.
And I'll say this, he deserves it because he's a magician.
Well, that's what I'm like. The people who made that movie that Demi Moore won the Oscar for
the
or
substance.
Nominated for, they should have just used this doctor. That's the answer.
Yeah.
Okay, so Kris turned 70 on November 5th. This weekend was when she celebrated with a James Bond 0070 theme.
Oh, I see.
I know, because I saw 0070 and I was like, what is everybody doing? Does nobody know what 007 is? And then I realized because she's 70.
Makes sense.
And she celebrated it at our old boss's mansion, uh-huh. Jeff Bezos.
Yeah. Everyone was like, why is the doorway so low? Everyone had to duck under to get inside. He's like, it's made for me. Shut up.
Yeah, that's true.
Uh-huh.
So Kris wore a Givenchy haute couture gown by Alexander McQueen. Did you see these pictures?
Yeah.
Her dress? It made me think of the red dancing woman emoji. It was a strapless red gown with ruffles and a train, plus black gloves and diamond drop earrings. Mm-hmm. She looked incredible. I don't think anybody can deny that.
No, I mean, in general,
people are trying to.
Yeah, of course. Well, of course they are, because they're, I mean,
haters gonna hate. I get it.
We're all mad that we can't afford to look 30 at 70.
Yeah. Well, it's that whole thing that's like, I'm not ugly. I'm just poor.
Exactly.
That's what it all comes down to.
Yeah.
So the party had Kris-themed poker chips, lighters, ashtrays, a martini-shaped cake, everything you'd want at a birthday party that probably cost $1 million.
What do you mean a Kris-themed? Like her face?
It said Kris's 007D on like, they had literally like porcelain ashtrays. I was like, I would love this. I don't even smoke, but I love a good ashtray. It looks so elegant.
Yeah.
And then the attendees list was a true who's who.
Yeah.
I feel like it's probably easier to say who wasn't there, but I'll go through just some quick names. Oprah Winfrey, Chris Rock, Mariah Carey. Adele was there trying to cover her face from the paparazzi.
I saw that.
She's like, I don't want to be here, but I have to be.
Yeah, right. She fucking loves that shit. She just doesn't want the backlash for it.
It's like, well, then you should have done what Beyonce and Jay-Z did, because they snuck into the party and nobody saw them.
Yeah, that worked out really well. None of us heard about it at all.
Paris Hilton was there. Kathy Hilton was there.
Of course.
Paris Hilton 2.0. Meghan Trainor was there. Did you see pictures? She looks like Paris Hilton more than Paris Hilton does.
Every time I see a picture of Meghan Trainor, I'm like, who is that?
I know.
And then I look at the caption, I'm like, oh, it's Meghan Trainor.
Yeah.
I don't like her. I'm sorry. There's something about her vibe.
She's got a vibe. Yeah.
I don't like her.
Yeah. Prince Harry, Meghan Markle, and then a bunch of the billionaires, Mark Zuckerberg, Bill Gates, Jay-Z, Tyler Perry, et cetera, et cetera.
Bill Gates?
Yeah. There's paparazzi photos of him with a big gift in a box. And it's so cute because there are no pictures of other people at this event carrying gifts in. It's like they use their assistants. He's like, I'm a down-to-earth billionaire.
Yeah, he's from a generation where you brought a gift, whether it was a birthday party or not.
Yeah, well, his parents dropped him off and they were like, say hi to her mom for us. But I think the most exciting part about this party was the cops showed up. That's how you know it's a real good party.
Right.
And they showed up twice.
For what?
So the first time was for noise complaints from neighbors. Because Bruno Mars performed live, which, of course, that has to happen at a birthday party.
Yeah.
So the police were called. They only issued a warning. But then they came back when they learned that large fake hedges were blocking the street outside the property. Hmm. And the dividers required a permit, which hadn't been obtained. So the greenery was removed as party goers left. And I just imagined.
Hold on. Were they leaving because the party was over or just because?
Yeah. It just happened coincided. And also, I think they were probably filtering in and out depending on what other events they had.
Right.
But just the idea that the cops were in their detective house. What are they called? Station. And, like, they're like, we blew this case wide open.
Yeah.
These hedges are fake.
Yeah.
Without a permit.
And they were filled with drugs.
They were the party favors.
Was this in Beverly Hills?
Yeah.
Because Beverly Hills, I figured, has so many permitting rules for parties. It's a nightmare logistically.
Yeah, I remember. I couldn't work an event because I didn't have a California ID.
Yeah.
Beverly Hills was like,
Out of towner, get the hell out of here. You can't drive. Yeah. You're not ready for Beverly Hills.
And they weren't wrong. I wasn't. Still am not. But yeah, the night ended with party favors from Dunkin' Donuts.
Oh.
They had given out their stuff with sayings that said, America runs on Kris Jenner.
Wow.
Yeah.
I don't know about America, but the family for sure.
Dunkin' Donuts has gone so downhill. And I know this is going to be offensive to everybody in the northeast of this country because it's like Dunkin' Donuts is what keeps it alive. But the ones that I've had of late, not great.
I don't remember the last time I had Dunkin' Donuts.
It's been years, but every time I take a bite, I'm like, why? It's consistently tastes terrible. I got to let it go.
Well, I mean, no offense to other places, but we live in LA where you can literally get any kind of donut you want anywhere.
Right, exactly.
So it's like... Same with probably like New York City. Like we don't, when I see a chain restaurant, a chain donut shop, I'm like, eh.
Yeah.
So
I always have a donut whenever I go home because my parents, like if I go to church with my parents, because there's always donuts there and they're from the local donut shop called the Donut Shack. And they used to be incredible.
Yeah.
Because they were like artisanal type donuts.
Right. You can't beat a local mom and pop donut shop.
I can now.
Well, you can't beat a good one.
They sold and it's so depressing. But yeah, I know what you mean. Anyway, everyone got donuts and left with a hedge, I guess.
Wow. That was part of their plan the whole time.
Yeah. Yeah. Crazy. They were the party favors.
Crazy. I mean, this is just I saw some posts that were like Americans are losing their food.
I know.
And these fucking billionaires are partying like it's truly the Hunger Games. Like it's here.
Yeah. Yeah. It's one of those things. One of the articles I saw was like the top 10 richest people at Kris Jenner's birthday party. And it was just obscene, the amount of wealth.
Was this in Forbes?
Actually, it wasn't.
I'm kidding. I know it wasn't Forbes.
But it's funny because they were like, we're determining our wealth based off the Forbes 2024 like list of people's wealth.
Who was the richest?
Mark Zuckerberg. $216 billion.
Say his real name.
What, curly-headed Fuckerberg?
Yes.
And then Jeff is so poor. He's at 215.
Oh, gosh, he's struggling.
One whole billion below.
Well, yeah. That's why he was charging entry for this party.
I know. He was.
Yeah. All right. Well, fuck them. So, Nikki Glaser, my girl, one of my favorite comedians, hosted SNL last Saturday. She had a 9-minute monologue, which felt long, but usually they give stand-ups longer monologues.
I was going to say, what's the standard time for a monologue at SNL?
They're typically like 6 or 7 minutes. Dave Chappelle has the longest monologue at 17 minutes. But again, he's a stand-up, so.
Dave Chappelle would go way longer.
I'm sure it was planned. I don't think it was like, you got 6 minutes. And he's like, I'm going to take 11 extra.
I know, but if anyone was going to be, it would be Dave Chappelle.
It's also, if you look at the stats, his is the most watched on YouTube by far.
Really?
Yeah. It was actually a really good monologue.
I guess if you like his stand-up, it's kind of like a free mini show.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying. Every time a stand-up hosts, it seems like they come out with a handheld mic. It's very stand-up vibes and they're longer. So Nikki started out by talking about how it's been a dream of hers to be here. And she was like, I'm in New York City, Epstein's original island.
Oh, no.
And then this is where people got upset, well, around these two areas. So she did jokes about trafficking. And she was talking about how, like, her Gen Z friends are all really afraid of being trafficked. And then she joked that when she was in her 20s, she was only worried about good old-fashioned rape. And she was like, I didn't think it would be a career. We didn't think it was anything more than a temp job on a frat house futon.
Oh my God.
And she's like, so now I'm constantly worried about it. I'm like, guys, we're going to get trafficked. And her friends are like, you're fine. Like, if anything, we're safer because you're here. They think you're our madam. I was like, that's fucked up.
Oh, I was going to be like, she's too high profile to traffic. People would notice if she was missing. It's always people that are like runaways or...
I mean, tell that to Olivia Pope.
If I watched that show, I would.
So then she did a bit about how she was going to take a shower and her 4-year-old nephew wanted to shower with her. And her sister was like, he can shower with you. It's fine. He does it with us. And Nikki was like, that's fine for you guys, but... Are you really okay with an adult showering with your child? She's like, maybe it's okay if you come and supervise. And her sister was like, well, why? Like, why would you need supervision? And Nikki was like, what if I molest him? And her sister was like, would you? And Nikki was like, no, never. That's disgusting. But that's what I would say if I was going to do it. She's like, they lie. You can't trust anybody. Like, I don't even trust myself. And then she was joking about like how I think this is where people got because she really did toe the line. I will say that. But she was like, you never know. People like what they like. That could open up a part of my brain where I'm like, oh, okay. She's like, I don't want that to happen. You don't know how pedophiles become pedophiles, essentially.
Oh, my God.
The SNL audience is never really perfect for a stand-up. Yeah, I feel like they're...
Definitely not.
Which is crazy. Like, they're obviously there to watch comedy, but they're just very quiet for the most part. They like a safe monologue, it seems. But...
Well, and I also feel like... They're here for a very specific reason, and it's not stand-up.
Yeah, they're here to see your friend who can't get out of the writer's room.
Which one? Well, now I have a friend on stage.
Right. But I'm still talking about the one from last year that...
Yeah, he's stuck in there.
He cannot get out. So it was definitely Nikki. She is a very, like, push-the-line comic. Definitely one of the more risque monologues I've seen on SNL, just in my own memory. But of course, the headlines are like, everyone's outraged. Somebody on Twitter wrote, okay, Nikki Glaser lost me because why are we talking about molestation and pedophilia? Which I will say, get out of the country if you don't want to hear about that. Maybe we should be talking about it more because it's fucking everywhere.
Yeah, and all of DC is doing it.
Exactly. Like, I'm sorry, if you're living in your little bubble where you're like, how dare we say the word pedophilia? Look around, fucker, look around. Somebody else said, Nikki Glaser is really giving me the ick on SNL tonight. I gotta say, I watched the full monologue on YouTube. Mm-hmm. I do watch SNL, but we haven't watched the episode yet. So I was like, well, let me just watch the monologue for this. And all the comments on YouTube seem to love it.
Mm. And no one's deleting comments?
On YouTube? Probably not.
I feel like that always happens. You're like, so-and-so is deleting comments.
Not on YouTube, though. This is like on their own Instagrams, sure.
Oh, I thought it was on Nikki's page.
No, no, no. It's like the official whatever monologue. Mm. She did post it, though, on her Instagram eventually. Mm-hmm. And like some of the comments are like, you killed it. You did a great job. Others are like, "Not, you're not funny." I went and saw her tour and it just wasn't funny. And it's like, all right, whatever. So she hasn't obviously addressed any of this alleged backlash. But on Monday, she posted a carousel on Instagram that said, "Best week of my life. Thank you so much to Lauren, the cast, writers, and all the crew who made this week genuinely fun and treated me like one of you. I knew this week would be difficult, but I didn't realize just how compassionate, lighthearted, and encouraging everyone would be every step of the way. I was surrounded by the most exceptional talent in the business, and I learned so damn much from you all." Mm. So, I don't know. She said it was a dream. She doesn't give a shit.
I don't know. It's definitely a choice for her to go on a national television show and have a set that includes her debating whether or not she should shower with her nephew.
I don't know that I took it as her debating whether or not. She was very clear, like, I'm not going to shower with him. That's weird.
I think I need to, it's hard to hear the nuance when somebody's just retelling the joke. Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of it, is that people aren't actually watching it. They're now just hearing these, like,
well, of course,
and stuff like that. And then they're flying off that.
Yeah.
Well, she seems unbothered. And honestly, that's the way to go.
She usually is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you need that kind of energy in this business. That's for sure.
That is for sure. Especially if you're going to be a stand up.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you someone who doesn't have that kind of energy. Blake Lively.
Yeah.
Nothing's rolling off her back. So...
Except Ryan's tears.
Oh my God. Blake Lively is seeking $161.2 million in damages from Justin Baldoni and his co-defendants. The reason why this is in the news, because she actually obviously sued him last year. Like, this is when this all started.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why this is in the news is we finally have the total. So I'm going to do a little bit of backtracking.
Uh-huh.
Blake filed a civil rights case against Justin last December, alleging that Justin and the head of Wayfarer Studios, Jamie, engaged in inappropriate sexual conduct in and out of the workplace, and that a smear campaign was orchestrated against her in retaliation for speaking up. Then she followed the complaint with a formal lawsuit. Now we're hearing how much she's seeking, and these are preliminary numbers. So $161.2 million in damages breaks down to $56.2 million in lost earnings from acting endorsements and public appearances, as well as $34 million in reputational harm following Justin's alleged smear campaign against her, which reportedly includes 65 million online impressions of alleged defamatory content that Blake says caused measurable financial harm. Which I am wildly curious how they got 65 million online impressions. I guess there's probably internet mining companies that can pull up how many times somebody said fake Blake.
Are people saying that?
That was one of the things I remember coming out.
Fake Lively?
Like, they would just call her, that's what it was, fake Lively. Yeah.
Yeah, that makes more sense.
Yeah.
I just think the number 161.2 is insane. Just round it up. Yeah. Or round it off at 161.
Well, you have to show your work. And so they're like, it looks way more real if there's a point two. But this isn't even all of it. So Blake is also claiming nearly $71 million in business losses connected to her consumer brands. That includes $49 million from her hair care line, Blake Brown, and $22 million from her beverage company, Betty Buzz / Betty Booze. That's where the Betty was coming from. I was like, I know there's a Betty somewhere in this. So this total does not actually include punitive damages, non-economic damages, or attorney fees, which have yet to be assigned a fixed amount. But speaking of punitive damages, they're seeking at least three times 161.2.
What?
So $483 million. So basically, they're like, these are the initial numbers. We haven't said what we're going to actually seek from the defendants.
Uh-huh.
So these are all preliminary. They're subject to proof through expert testimony at trial, which we all know will be in March of next year.
Yeah.
Now, what's also in the headlines are the people that have been listed.
Right.
Because there's been a lot of celebrities.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's important to know that the people that are listed doesn't mean they're actually going to testify.
Right.
These are just people that Blake thinks could help her case.
Mm-hmm.
Ryan Reynolds, Colleen Hoover, the writer of It Ends With Us. Scooter Braun.
What?
No idea why he's on there. Taylor Swift, we all know about. According to Blake's legal team, Taylor can speak to the alleged conduct, complaints, or discussions about the work environment on It Ends With Us, as well as the retaliation campaign alleged by Blake and the resulting damages suffered.
Are they even friends? Like, are they talking?
Not after this. I don't know. It's one of those things. Taylor's really good about only talking about things she wants to talk about.
Yeah.
Because she really hasn't said anything about this.
No, and I want her to.
Yeah. Hugh Jackman's also on the list. Emily Blunt. The Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants co-stars, all three of them are on the list. They're being called for their purported knowledge of the incidents leading to Blake's legal action.
Hmm.
So, yeah.
If I'm the other attorney, I'm going to be like, why did you guys take down your supportive post for Blake?
I know. Well, that's why I'm like, all I'm picturing are texts where it's like, hey, how's it going? It's like, ugh. And they're like, see, I texted her, ugh. That means I was upset.
That's the thing, like. And we'll get into this with the Jeremy Renner stuff, too. But it's like your evidence texting somebody else what happened isn't necessarily evidence to me.
Mm-hmm. If you're thinking even one step ahead, you would text that for your alibi.
Yeah. And that's so sinister. It. But people would do that.
Yeah, they would. All right. So I will say we have a little bit of a follow up from last week where I guess it was 2 weeks ago. When Justin missed the deadline and everyone lost their shit. So Justin's lawyer, Brian Friedman, was on the November 8th episode of the Two Angry Men podcast. Do you know that podcast?
Oh, God, I can't. I don't miss it.
It's hosted by Harvey and this guy, Mark. And Harvey's the guy that founded TMZ. Harvey from TMZ.
Oh, Harvey Levin?
Harvey Levin, yeah. And it's crazy because on this episode, Brian said it was TMZ's fault that this misinformation went out because he was like, your reports stemmed from a misunderstanding of the legal position and that no appeal deadline was missed, which I think is hilarious because both of the hosts are lawyers.
Harvey Levin is a lawyer?
Yeah. He used to be an entertainment lawyer before he started TMZ.
Wow. Interesting.
But yeah, so Harvey was like, yeah, you're right. We did jump the gun on that. But apparently, Brian says he and Justin are excited about going to trial and they're happy with the evidence, whatever that means.
Are they excited? Is anyone ever excited to go to trial? Like, that's crazy.
I think if I was the stenographer, I would be.
Yeah. Or the sketch artist.
Or the jury.
Well, if it's a good case and I'm the jury. So is that it with Blake? Is that the last update?
That's all we got for right now. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Any word on whether or not Brené Brown heard our show last week?
Yeah. She sent a cease and desist.
Okay.
But that we'll just put it with my mom and dad, so.
Right, right. Fine. Well, speaking of cease and desists, Jeremy Renner is in the news. This story is so dense. All right, so let me back up. Last week, Chinese filmmaker Yi Zhao made a bunch of posts on Instagram accusing Jeremy Renner of sexual misconduct and threatening to call ICE on her.
Mm.
So Yi and Jeremy recently worked together on two film projects. One is a documentary called Chronicles of Disney, and the other is an animated AI movie called Stardust Future, which shame, shame, shame. You don't need to make AI animated movies, okay?
Oh, I missed the AI part. Oh, I hate that.
Yeah.
I hate that so much.
So the reason this was so dense for me is because I went to her Instagram instead of reading the news articles because I wanted to see exactly what she was posting. And
yeah,
she's making so many posts about it, and all the information is essentially in the captions. So on November 3rd, she made a post with a picture that just said cancel. It was like a white background with black letters.
Okay.
And then the caption had the information, and she said that she had to share a truth that she'd been holding inside for too long. She said that the Disney documentary that was made has been damaged by online trolls and the misconduct of Jeremy Renner. She said, Mr. Renner first contacted me directly in June, sending personal and intimate photographs of himself, behavior that, according to public reports, he has exhibited before. He convinced me of his sincerity, saying he had been single for a long time and open to a long-term relationship. I believed in him, in the power of love, and in the possibility of redemption. Ugh. So they started dating. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, things ended at some point.
Yeah.
But we will get back to that. So now he's allegedly refusing to promote the film, and he's allowing his fans to spread rumors that he was AI in the Disney documentary.
Okay.
And she's mad because she's saying that he's allowing these claims to be said and he's doing nothing about them, and he's like orchestrating this thing. She does have some receipts, and she has posted screenshots of texts between her and Jeremy where he says, I love to please fill you deeply anytime, any place.
Oh God.
There's also one where he sends a picture of these two people on a couch banging, but she like blacked out the people, and the text underneath it said, this okay?
She is it like a stock photo?
Maybe. I don't know. It could be a screenshot from a porn or from porn. I don't know.
Oh, that too. Okay.
But Yi is also posting like these pictures of Jeremy just in everyday life, like of his bedroom, of him like sitting on the couch. And some of them are blurry to prove that like they actually did date and they're not AI because they're blurry.
Well, case is closed there.
Exactly. So on Thursday, she did a pretty in-depth interview with the Daily Mail. She also has a post about how people told her not to go to the Daily Mail, but that this one reporter did such a great job and he's like an exceptional journalist and blah, blah, blah. And that guy posted blurry photos of him with a gun to her head.
It's like, come on, the Daily Mail, just release the article yourself.
I know.
More reputable.
So she claims in this interview that she was with Jeremy on August 20th to discuss their documentary when Jeremy drank a whole bottle of wine by himself and got violent. And she locked herself in a bathroom. And she posted pictures on Instagram of her screenshots. This is what I was talking about. Texting what looks like a group chat saying that she was scared of him and that she was locked in the bathroom. And they were like, mm-hmm. Oh, my God, get out of there. Can you get out of there? Blah, blah, blah. So a spokesperson for Jeremy told The Cut that Yi's allegations are totally inaccurate and untrue. Jeremy's attorney, Marty Singer, who's a very high-profile Hollywood attorney, also denied the allegations in an interview with People. He said they were false, outrageous, and highly defamatory. Marty also said that Jeremy and Yi shared a brief consensual encounter at a hotel in Reno in July before meeting for a second time in August, and claimed that Yi is now retaliating because Jeremy rejected her romantic advances and didn't mm-hmm. promote her projects.
It's a really, really easy one that men love to fall back on.
Yeah, of course. So his lawyer also kind of addressed the claims that Jeremy threatened to call ICE on Yi. Uh-huh. He said that Yi relentlessly harassed and threatened Jeremy with hundreds of unsolicited and unwanted messages. So I guess that's the response to him calling ICE.
If that was the case, I'd be calling ICE on this person that keeps robot that keeps calling saying I've been trying to reach you.
Someday in the future, there is going to be a department that's responsible for getting rid of robots. And it's like, no, you guys let this happen. So now they're going to take over and I'm on the robot side. So after this statement went out from Jeremy's lawyer, Yi made a post on Instagram to clarify some things. She said that she and Jeremy's first physical encounter wasn't consensual, and later interactions became consensual. She also shared screenshots of alleged DMs that she got from four other women claiming that Jeremy also started his interactions with them by sending dick pics and claiming he was a changed man after his accident. So it sounds like this is kind of his playbook, if true.
Well, he's been in the news periodically for questionable behavior to women.
I've never heard of it before.
I remember, I think it was before he really, really blew up with Marvel, or maybe it was right after, but I've seen whispers in like Reddit threads, nothing like huge, but enough where it's like, especially being out here and the shit we hear, it's like, I'm sure I don't have any question that he's problematic. So
yeah, same. I mean, these DMs from other women, which again, we don't know who they're actually from. There's no name at the top.
I have sent messages to myself and then changed. I did this once to my friend Quinn because I was trying to convince him my dad hated him. Uh-huh. And so I texted myself and then changed the name to dad.
Yeah, we've all done that.
But I made the rookiest mistake and sent a screenshot of it as if I had sent it. Because, you know, you can tell who sent it based off what side it is. Yeah. So I played myself.
Yeah, well, that's what you get for being dishonest. Poor Quinn.
No one has ever said that and ever will.
But one of the women was like, yeah, like, no offense, but as soon as he saw that I wasn't falling for it, he moved on. You fell for everything he said to you, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, he's probably, even when you guys were together, he was probably DMing other women and all of this shit. So she did also share a screenshot allegedly from Jeremy that said, immigration will be notified. And then the rest of the message is cut off. So I guess that's what she's talking about as far as ICE goes. But Jeremy is claiming the exact opposite happened. So he claims that Yi couldn't keep her hands off of him when he drove her to the airport after their meeting in August. He says she sent him hundreds of explicit text messages asking to be with him and demanding sex. In one of these alleged messages, he claims that Yi wrote, I want him inside of me so badly. So, so badly. Fuck me, babe. Which I'm like, was the quote, I want him inside of me or I want you inside of me? I'm unclear about that. In another one, she allegedly talked about playing with Jeremy's quote-unquote fake giant thing while thinking about the real giant.
Oh, he sent her a mold of his penis?
Yeah, that's got to be what it means? Is. He's also saying that Yi threatened to harm him publicly if he didn't agree to promote her documentary and then make it falsely appear that they're an item. So on Friday, Jeremy sent Yi a cease and desist letter that demanded she stop making any defamatory communications or spreading false, fabricated, and salacious lies. The letter also claimed she has manufactured fake and outlandish claims to generate publicity. And he's, I guess, said that if she doesn't stop spreading lies, she's going to face legal action and potentially risk losing millions in liability. And when TMZ reached out to her asking about the cease and desist that he allegedly sent, she said that she's sent him three cease and desist letters on her own in the last month. So it's very he said, she said, but she does have a lot of screenshots. I just don't know how valid we can say they are because I don't know. But I don't think he's a good guy. I'll say that.
Yeah. It's one of those things where it's so hard to be like a victim. In the sense that she's doing all this, she's posting all this stuff, and it's so easy for guys to be like, well, she's crazy.
Right, exactly.
And it's so frustrating because obviously we don't know what the actual truth is. It's somewhere in the middle, probably. But I'm leaning towards she's the one that got fucked over and the majority of what she's saying is closer to the truth than anything that he's saying.
Yeah.
But when her whole feed is just about this,
it is, yeah,
the narrative becomes, well, she's like obsessed with him, it's like she's obsessed with this, and it sucks because it's like we weren't there when this all started, and like victims of this kind of thing just get so fucked over. And it sucks.
Yeah, it does.
Hopefully justice will prevail, but
hopefully we will see.
All right, real quick, we didn't talk about David Harbour and Millie Bobby Brown on the main episode. We actually talked about them on our burn book last week.
Yeah.
But just to bring it to the main feed, the Daily Mail released a report at the beginning of November this month that Millie had filed a complaint of bullying and harassment against David before production
on Stranger Things season 5 started. Mm-hmm. Fast forward 5 days, November 6th was the premiere for the 5th and final season of Stranger Things. And Millie and David seem fine. And that's what everyone's talking about, where they're like, okay, well, we have this Daily Mail article saying that she wants him dead, basically. And then on the red carpet, you know, Millie's telling Entertainment Tonight that she obviously had a really special bond with David because they have a father-daughter relationship and do every scene together. David spoke to ET only. He wouldn't give anyone else an interview. And he said that he adored Millie and he's been proud to watch all of them grow up and become such great artists. So now it's seeming like Netflix is really pushing this damage control, where it's like, we're just focusing on how great everything is. And a lot of the comments coming from production, directors, Netflix, they're all about how this is a family and we all get together. And so we've been hit with an onslaught of a lot of, oh, everything is great. A lot of, they're all united. Millie and David, they arrived together on the red carpet. Like, it's, they're really showing a united front, and it makes you wonder.
I mean, I guess good for them, though.
Yeah. I hope it's, I hope they're doing it. I hope Millie's doing it of her own accord. I hope she doesn't feel like she has to do it. I hope this is genuine. She's doing this because she feels like this is true to her.
She doesn't strike me as somebody who's like, okay, I'll go along with it.
Right.
Like, she, so I don't know. It was wild to see.
Yeah. Sources did tell Variety that there was an investigation into Millie's complaint and that it was resolved.
Yeah.
But we don't know to what end.
Right.
Crazy. But that seems to verify there actually was a complaint.
That's true.
So.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. Well, just give us the fucking show. Like, enough of this.
It's coming.
Enough.
End of this month. They filmed it at the nursing home.
I know. We're all in there now. But yeah, I am looking forward to the show wrapping up finally.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it'll set some records.
Yeah, longest show in
the
history.
Longest show. Yeah, I was just gonna say
it's been longer than The Simpsons somehow, and they've had the most seasons of any show.
Honestly, I could see that. I feel like I've been hearing about this show for decades.
Long
and
time.
I've never watched it.
Right, you should. It's good.
All right, Brooke, take me back. I need to escape 2025.
Okay, well, I don't know how much of an escape this story is.
Oh, no.
But we'll see. It's September 2nd, 2005 in New York City. A studio inside 30 Rockefeller Plaza is buzzing with celebrities like Leonardo DiCaprio, Lindsay Lohan, and Hilary Swank as a live television broadcast is about to start. Tonight's show is being hosted by Matt Lauer, and it's a benefit concert for the victims of Hurricane Katrina. Just 4 days ago, 5 states along the Gulf Coast were devastated by the storm. Many people lost their homes and even their lives. This benefit was very quickly thrown together when New Orleans native Harry Connick Jr. called NBC chairman and CEO Bob Wright and encouraged him to help the families affected by Katrina. Harry even offered his services for the benefit. So NBC Universal got to planning. After all, 4 days is not a lot of time to throw together an hour-long special chocked full of celebrities. But it's only live TV. What could possibly go wrong? The benefit concert rolls on with several musical performances from stars with personal ties to New Orleans and the other southern states hit by the devastation, like Tim McGraw and Faith Hill. Harry Connick Jr. himself sings Bourbon Street Parade with a full jazz band. And Aaron Neville even performs his cover of the Randy Newman song Louisiana 1927, which is an anthem anytime something like this happens to the South.
What has happened down here is the winds have changed. Clouds rolled in from the north and it started to rain. It rained real hard. And it rained for a real long time. 6 feet of water in the streets of Atlanta.
Standard live show awkwardness aside, the night is going well. But then the camera cuts to Mike Myers and Kanye West. Mike is wearing jeans and a black blazer and looks ready to raise some money for victims. Kanye's attire could essentially be found in any early 2000s time capsule. Khaki pants and a long-sleeved striped cotton shirt with a white collar. Very Abercrombie. Seconds before they went live, Kanye leaned into Mike and whispered, "I'm going to ad-lib a little bit." Mike is a seasoned improviser. He can roll with the punches. So he starts their call to action on script.
"With the breach of three levees protecting New Orleans, the landscape of the city has changed dramatically, tragically, and perhaps irreversibly. There's now over 25 feet of water where there was once city streets and thriving neighborhoods."
As Mike finishes his line, Kanye clears his throat. He's visibly nervous as he starts to deliver his first off-script line of the night. With a shake in his voice, he starts by saying how much he hates to see how black people have been portrayed in the media in the aftermath of the hurricane.
"If you see a black family, it says they're looting. See a white family, it says they're looking for food. And you know it's been 5 days because most of the people are black. And even for me to complain about, I would be a hypocrite because I've tried to turn away from the TV because it's too hard to watch. I've even been shopping before even giving a donation. So now I'm calling my business manager right now to see what is the biggest amount I can give."
Kanye ends by saying that he knows the Red Cross is doing everything they can and that a lot of people that could help are at war right now fighting another way. Then he says, "They've given them permission to go down and shoot us." Now, even though it is chaotic and a little stream of consciousness, what Kanye's saying isn't necessarily wrong. Mike Myers even throws in some approving nods along the way. But it is obvious that he's a little caught off guard by Kanye's impromptu speech. Mike does his best to get back on script with his next line. But it's clear that he's kind of speeding through it in anticipation of what might come next. Mike ends his last line by saying, "The destruction of the spirit of the people of southern Louisiana and Mississippi may end up being the most tragic loss of all." And then Kanye stares directly into the lens and says,
"George Bush doesn't care about black people."
Mike has no idea how to react. He pauses, looks over at Kanye, and then quickly says, "Call 1-800. He doesn't even get the full phone number out before the camera abruptly cuts to the next presenter, Chris Tucker, who also looks like he has no idea what just happened or why he's suddenly on camera. And they aren't the only ones who are shocked by what they just saw. 80 million people watch this moment play out live. And in the days that follow, it's all anyone can talk about. It sparks a national debate about racism and poverty in America. And many agree that the government's reaction was too slow and disproportionately affected low-income families and people of color, while others looked at the moment as an unnecessary call-out of George W. Bush. NBC releases a statement to cover their asses, saying that Kanye departed from the scripted comments that were prepared for him, and his opinions in no way represent the views of the networks. But NBC wasn't that mad because a month later, Kanye is the musical guest on Saturday Night Live and even appears in a short backstage sketch with Mike Myers. Mike actually becomes an unexpected ally of Kanye in the aftermath. And in 2008, he even parodies the viral moment with Kanye in a deleted scene from his movie, The Love Guru.
"This is my friend, Kanye West. Yeah, it's his first hockey game. Yeah.
Kanye, who do you like in tonight's matchup?"
"No, don't say it. I love don't growing up, but don't the Kings power play is don't pretty tough to stop." "Don't say thank God. Thank you."
"How did you two guys meet?"
"Well, a couple of years ago, actually, it's not a very interesting story. Not interesting at all."
In 2010, W addresses the moment in his memoir, which reignites the story. During an interview with Matt Lauer, he calls Kanye's speech one of the most disgusting moments of his presidency.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's absurd to say.
Yeah. In response, Kanye also does an interview with Matt Lauer and says that in his moment of frustration, he didn't have the grounds to call George Bush a racist. He's clearly annoyed that he has to address this again 5 years later and makes that apparent to Matt. To this day, it remains one of the wildest moments in live TV and in political and pop culture history. It's so funny.
This was on my list.
Was it?
It's the first time something has been done that I was thinking of.
It's so funny because remember I sent you a text and there was another benefit like days later. And I'm like, wow, there's full video. I'm like setting the scene. I'm like, the camera opens on Randy Newman and Ellen DeGeneres. And I'm like, this is a different fucking event.
these assholes.
There's like no video of this, just the Kanye Mike Myers stuff.
Yeah, I was going to say, you got to see the video because Mike Myers's face,
I know,
is seared in my brain of just trying to do the mental math of, I don't know what I'm supposed to do. Because this is, of course, this is not 2025 when everyone's flying off the cuff and everyone's completely unhinged and it's normal now.
Yeah.
This is like,
yeah,
where even Mike Myers, who's a loose cannon on his own right.
One of the comments on YouTube was like, and Mike Myers is like, I'm Canadian.
He's like, I don't fuck with you all down there.
Yeah. But Mike was like, I don't know. He did an interview at some point and he said, I don't know why the emphasis was more on my face than it was somebody speaking truth to power. He's like, I felt honored to be next to him when he was speaking his truth, because it's true. What Kanye was saying was accurate. He was just very like nervous and kind of bumbly, which you can hear in the clip. But just watching it and Mike ending his thing and then Kanye pausing and going, George Bush doesn't care about black people, is so fucking funny.
I don't think I realized there had been more other than that, like leading up to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For some reason, the only clip I, because this, of course, would have been a time when, actually, when was it? 2005?
Yeah.
I would have been in college, but I just, I only remember that like 10 second thing.
Yeah. Kanye goes on for quite a while.
Yeah.
In his first
ad-lib. He really was telling us who he is.
Yeah.
Since
well, I was
beginning.
Like, what a simpler time when this was the unhinged Kanye.
I know. Like, well, damn. This was an unhinged Kanye I could get behind.
Exactly.
It's like he is speaking truth. It's just in the most non-decorum way I've ever seen.
He looks so nervous, though. It's good to see him nervous.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
some humility still existed.
Yeah. But wild moment for sure.
Yeah. Ugh. Well, I am telling a story today. I don't think you've heard this story, but I have to set the scene a little bit.
Okay.
And the reason I'm telling this story is because Six Flags in Maryland, in Bowie, Maryland, shut down.
Oh.
It's gone. 50 years. It's out of here. I think last week was the end. So my story is about when I worked at Six Flags.
Okay.
Did you know I used to work there? I've told you this.
Maybe you've mentioned it, but I definitely don't know this story.
I worked at Six Flags maybe for a summer as an EMT.
Mm-hmm.
So the first aid tent or whatever. And Six Flags, for those that don't know, at least the one in Maryland, is truly the poor man's Disney. It's the poor man's Hershey Park. It's the poor man's poor amusement park. Like, people would literally just get their kids summer passes, and that was how they had childcare. So they would drop their kids off on their way to work.
Oh my God.
And then come pick them up on their way back, which honestly, if I would probably do something similar because it was cheaper than after school activities or whatever. I mean, not babies, obviously, but
that seems reckless.
Yeah, people are really reckless.
Yeah.
So I worked at this job with my boyfriend at the time, who was also an EMT.
Wow.
And and, you know, we'd get all kinds of calls, whatever. So one day we're working and it's a hot day, and this is Maryland hot. So you've got the humidity factor. So it's like hot, hot.
Mm-hmm.
I think the index was maybe like 103, 104. So we get a call and it's that Sylvester is down on like the main street, like the walking, like where you walk into Six Flags.
Yeah.
So we go and respond, and lo and behold, Sylvester's passed out on the ground.
Uh-huh.
And
The character.
No.
This isn't just
the
some
actual
guy.
Cat.
No, I mean, like, it could be some guy named Sylvester.
Yes, the character. The character, like, with the head and everything.
Uh-huh.
So one of the big things about Six Flags, and I think this is probably true for all amusement parks, is they're really intent on keeping the illusion that these are real things. So characters can't. People who are in character costumes can't take their costumes off in front of people.
Right.
So there's of course a crowd around Sylvester and there's like his handler, I guess, because they have like, you know how the characters all have escorts around the park?
I guess. I don't know.
You'll never see like a character without a person that's not in costume because they're like, they communicate for them because they can't talk and blah, 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 blah. with like
I've never guests. Noticed that.
Really? Like at Disney. Whenever you go to Disney.
I've never noticed.
You'll notice it now.
I'm lost in the illusion.
Well, Disney found a sucker.
Those people might as well be wearing a cloak of invisibility because all I see is the character.
Well, that's incredible because they're supposed to be basically invisible.
Yeah.
But anyway, so they were like, you can't take off Sylvester's hat or head or whatever. And somebody was like, if you don't take off Sylvester's head, I'm going to sue you.
Who was saying like, you can't? The handler?
Yeah.
They were like, you got to go in through the dick?
Yeah, going through the pants. It was either the handler or another Six Flags employee, like representative. And so we were like, okay, well, our job is to keep people alive. So we don't really care about the illusion of anything. And we take Sylvester's head off. And Sylvester is a girl. She's like 19 years old, tall and skinny. And she's in fleece pajamas.
Oh, my God. Underneath?
Yes.
That's insane.
So we revive her. It was like heat exhaustion or whatever. And we bring her to the tent.
Uh-huh.
And so it was one of those things. This woman, so the woman that was like, I'm going to sue you. She kept trying to tell us.
Who?
Some person in the that was gathered around Sylvester.
Just a guest?
Yes.
Of the park? Wow.
Yes. Who was very litigious, apparently. And it's like, how are you going to sue us?
She's going to sue the EMTs or the park?
Everybody. Everybody was going to get the hand of justice from her.
Even that old guy who used to dance in the commercials? Do you remember that?
He was there, too. He was the one that said we can't take off Sylvester's hat. Head.
Listen, if he can dance around in that heat, Sylvester in their fleece pajamas can handle it, too.
Truly. Well, Sylvester survived thanks to us taking off his hat, his head. But what also sucked is we ended up destroying the costume. That was the other side of it. They're expensive. Mm-hmm. Back then, I don't know what they were. But one of the things, like in car accidents and stuff, we would have to like cut clothing off of people sometimes.
Yeah.
And there have been times where I've been like, this is a nice shirt.
Right.
And they're like, cut it. Like, we're trying to save somebody's life. But we ended up having to cut some of Sylvester's, like, body part off. Because it's, like, a thick costume.
It's like mascot costumes.
Literally. It is a mascot costume. That's a perfect way to put it. So we saved his/her life.
Wow.
Hopefully she stopped wearing fleece pajamas. I only worked there, like, another few weeks after that. It was... This Six Flags was... We're really scraping the bottom of the barrel there.
Well, you don't want to be part of that lawsuit.
I know. I was like, I heard lawsuit and I was like, I'm out of here.
That's to wear fleece pajamas is truly insane.
Well, this girl, and I'm just like, why? The things we did for money.
Yeah, but nobody forced her to wear those pajamas underneath. Like, the costume I get is hot, but to add on to it.
This girl was not the brightest bulb. I will say that.
Okay.
Which I think you had to be to work at Six Flags, which explains why I had to leave.
You had to be not a bright bulb?
Just the people working there. Even the EMTs. I was like, this isn't great.
Wow.
And I was a fresh EMT. Like, I'd been an EMT maybe for a couple years maybe at that point.
Huh.
Not even.
Jeez.
And I was like, this isn't great. So... I should tell you how bad it was. But yeah, so that's the story of me saving Sylvester and almost getting sued.
You're a hero.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're a hero.
All right. That's all we have for today, guys. As always, you can find us on Patreon. You can find us on Instagram. Our podcast page is at Almost Famous Pod. I'm at Arisha Skidmore Williams. Brooke is at Brooke Sifrin. Join us over on Patreon. The chat is blowing up.
It's a good time.
On it.
Yeah, it's fun. I love it.
I'll get on it at some point. Yeah. I swear.
She's lying.
I'm not. I'm going to get on it today. Out of spite.
Wow. Great.
All right. I'll see you next week.
Bye, famies.